thank you. I have briefed the committee members on the changes for the program. I'm not going to go into any details further. Suffice to say that today we're going to look at agreements. There are four international agreements that have been sent to us, and Ms. Dawood has found a fifth one that was sent some time back, which we seem to have missed. Unfortunately, the people that have to brief us on two of them are not here, and that's fine, they're overseas. So we'll do three of the agreements, one with Dwa and two with Dia, try and finalize them today and pass them. My approach to these agreements are, you know, I try and take them seriously, but not too seriously, because the problem is by the time they get here, they've been agreed to. So what's going to happen when we say, but we don't agree? So at best, what I've done in the past in my other committees, if we do see things that we don't like in the agreement, I usually pass a resolution then by saying we found this, we think it's wrong, but we do understand, and then we pass it. So at least we note our concerns, but we... So that's our approach to this matter, to look at it seriously, but not look at it seriously, because we can't really change anything, if you know what I mean. I've already previously raised my views in Parliament that there should be a different process. Although the executive is responsible for agreements, everyone knows that. The problem is Parliament has to ratify them in the end. So if there's a disjuncture between the two, that's really a rubber stamp process, and it doesn't work out. And although I don't expect any of these agreements to be problematic, I have found some justice agreements to be problematic, because if particularly ones in Africa. Because, I mean, our Bill of Rights is incredibly progressive on some issues. So when you pass some of them in Africa, clearly you have to take in consideration some very traditional views, both in terms of religion and custom. But luckily with water and environment, I imagine we won't have custom and religious problems. So, well, I hope not. So. And so it should be a little bit easier. What this means is that the program has been changed. A copy will be given to you hopefully today, or has been given to you. Please look at it if there are issues. I did raise them with you. If there are issues that you feel are problematic, let me know. But what has happened now is that the minister indicated she wanted to be present for the beer. She or the DG should be present for the briefing on the water resources strategy. I've therefore postponed this matter, but on the understanding that it must take place next Tuesday and Wednesday in the mornings. And the team I know was ready today already, so it's not a problem for them. They must just come next Tuesday and Wednesday. We've already sent out the press statement to ask people. If you are aware of good NGOs or people, businesses that are involved with water, you can always check with Chileka. She's got four or five pages of emails she sent it to. We try and send it to absolutely everyone we can think of. But if there are specific people you think, either the department or the members, of course, or even the public, if there are people that feel that we should specifically send the press statement directly and not rely on the media, please let us know who that is, and we'll see. If we haven't done it, we'd like to do it. I believe in trying to get this as wide as possible and give people opportunity. Those public hearings will take place, I think, more or less the middle of October. So they have 1.5 months to write submissions and they can send it to us. The cut-off date will be the 15th. We sent out the press statement last Friday, so they literally have 6 weeks in which to comment. And that's a good thing. Of course, the executive, the department, will also go on with their processes. That's another thing. But we have found that the department, particularly DIA, really appreciated our approach to this, because a much broader group of people came to give inputs, and it enriches the process, particularly something like a water strategy. It's absolutely vital that everyone has their say on it, otherwise we could have problems. That means that the Millennium Development Goals we would have dealt with next week. We'll now move that to the 18th of October. so that it's part of our process of looking at the annual report. And then the week after those two, so today we're doing the agreements. Tomorrow the whole day we'll be looking at the NEMLA bill. So Dia's team has to be here tomorrow. And therefore we won't sit. We've kept Thursday afternoon provisionally open, but at this stage I want to suggest that maybe we should finish our work tomorrow afternoon, so we won't go ahead for the rest of the week. These two other agreements that are outstanding, we'll make space for them as soon as those people are back from overseas. And then of course the minutes are close to being of this year that we haven't passed or close to being finished, and we will almost be ready with that. I did brief the committee on the oversight visits and the study group visits, so I'm not going to repeat that today, except to tell Water Affairs, so they're aware of it, that we are now trying to plan that visit of ours to the Lesotho Water Project that we wanted to do in July when they couldn't do it. We now want to try and plan it for the last week in September. During the recess, I think we've 26, 27, 28. So the actual visit will be on the 27th. We'll travel on the 26th and travel back on the 28th. So we'll go for one day. So if you guys can plan that for the 27th of September, we're already consulting whoever they are, that committee that runs the thing. So be aware of that, please. I think, DG, it's important that someone senior is there if we need to ask political questions from the department, okay? All right, so that is our plans for now. All right, can we start? The first briefing is from Dwa. It's the exactly the phase two of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project. Who will do the briefing?
Good afternoon to you, Chair, and members of the committee.
Good afternoon.
I am leading the delegation that the COO, Trevor Balza, will do the introduction and set the outlay of the program.
Go ahead, Mr. Balza.
Chair, thank you very much. If I could just introduce the delegation, first of all, DG has already introduced himself. Honourable Chairs, members, I'm Trevor Balza, I'm the Chief Operations Officer for the department, and I'll just introduce the other departmental members. Mayor Simpiwe Damani, who is our Director of Legal Services. Kurt Fortein, just indicate where you are, Director Capital Projects. I've got Vincent Monana here at the end there, who's from my office. Errol Makoka sitting at the back there from the Parliamentary Office. Then we've also brought down with us our three delegates to the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission. On my immediate left, Dr. Zodwa Dlamini. On her left, Mr. Leon Tromp, who's Zodwa Chair, is the Chief Delegate. Leon Tromp, just next to him, next to her, is the Chief Engineer and Delegate. And Mr. Pitswat on the far left is Chief Financial Officer and Delegate. So they're from the Commission. And Chair, if I could just before handing over to DG just to do the introduction, we have, apart from the documents which I'm sure you've had, which your Secretary has prepared for you, we've also handed out a document which has a black ring binder on it. And inside that document we have a summary of the agreement. Chair, that document is. We've got item one is a summary of the agreement of phase two. Then we've got the agreement as such, which was the agreement that was tabled in Parliament for consideration. We've also included in there for information purposes the anti-corruption policy. We've then have some presentation slides which Mayor Zodwa Dlamini will present immediately after DG has done the introduction. Then there's the updated implementation program, item 5, and then the projected cash flow until 2020, which are provisional program and cash flow at this point in time. So, Chair, the DG will just by way of introduction cover the essentially what was covered in the explanatory memorandum with the submission that was made to the speaker, requesting approval of the agreement. So if I could hand over to DG on that. Thanks, DG. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. This is a presentation to the portfolio committee. Today, the fourth, the outline of the presentation will be the background, the main objective and strategic focus, current status and ratification and recommendation. The background to this particular process is that in August 2011, the government of the Republic of South Africa and the government of the Kingdom of Lesotho signed the Lesotho Highland Water Program Phase 2 Agreement. The LHWP is a joint project between the Republic of South Africa and the Kingdom of Lesotho, which is implemented in accordance with the provisions of the treaty signed in 1986. The main objectives and the purpose is to enhance the use of the water of the Senqu, Orange River, by storing, regulating, directing and controlling the flow of the shared river in order to affect the delivery of specified quantities of water to South Africa. Secondly, the delivery system can also be used to generate hydroelectric power in Lesotho. South Africa is responsible for the cost to establish and manage the water transfer components of the Lesotho Highland Water Program, that is the Katse and the Mohale storage dams and the connecting tunnels, which are 124 kilometers long, which was completed as phase one of the LHWP in 2004. Thirdly, the main purpose of the Lesotho Highlands Water Program Phase 2 Agreement is to augment the original treaty and address specific issues related to the operation and implementation of Phase 2. The strategic focus. The conclusion of this agreement in 2011 is another step in the direction of fostering closer cooperation between and amongst the relevant SADC states with a view to advancing the SADC agenda of regional integration and poverty alleviation as articulated in Article 2 of the revised SADC Protocol on Shared Water Courses. Continuing with the strategic focus, the objective is to strengthen the regional integration by using water as a catalyst for socio-economic development, as well as to advance economic links with key African partners. The nature of the cooperation is aimed at mutual development of the South African and Lesotho water sector as a foundation for a modernized, integrated economy. Bilateral cooperation can cement political and strategic relations that can lead to more coordinated strategies in various multilateral environments such as SADC, African Union, and the United Nations. This cooperation further embodies the NEPAD principles for the development and Africa aspirations for its own renaissance. The current status, Section 231(2) of the Constitution provides that, quote, an international agreement binds the Republic only after it has been approved by a resolution in both the National Assembly and National Council of Provinces. unless it is an agreement of a technical, administrative, or executive nature, or an agreement which does not require either ratification or accession, close quote. In terms of the manual on executive acts of the President of the Republic of South Africa, paragraph 5.8, Cabinet must consent to the submission of the agreement to Parliament for the purpose of ratification or accession. The ratification process, before signing the agreement by the two countries, the Department of Water Affairs received the assurance from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors of the Department of International Relations and the Department of Justice that the agreement was not in conflict with international law and domestic law. As per Cabinet resolution, the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs has tabled the Lesotho Highlands Water Project Phase 2 agreement to Parliament for ratification, both to Speaker of the National Assembly and the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces. That's end my introductory presentation, and pass on as director to the next part of the presentation.
Thanks, Chairperson. The next part of the presentation will give a bit more detail on the Lesotho Highlands Water Project and cover issues right down to governance arrangements. And then the back end of that presentation, we'll go into some, we'll go into some detail on some of the articles of the agreement as well. But I would hand over to Ms. Hodwa, who will pause before that point where we look at the articles. And we'll then proceed from there with this issue. But she'll just give you an overview of the project as it stands and where we are at this point in time. Thanks, Chair.
This is a great honor for me to be presenting this to you. The presentation will just give you an overview of phase one of the project that is already been built, and then we'll take you now onto the journey of where we would want to go for phase two, and then we'll give you the costs that we have already worked on, as well as the implementation program. The treaty.
Before you start.
Yes, sir.
It's this document, eh?
Yes.
You know, that tackle this one, okay? All right, continue. Sorry, ma'am.
Okay, sir. The treaty was signed on the 24th of October, 1986. Okay. And the phase two...
This one. It's towards the middle of the back. Looks like this. Looks like you're getting married. Okay, everyone got it? I just draw attention to Mama Ganya's smart dress here. Looks like she's ready for another wedding. Okay. Let's continue.
Thank you. And the phase two agreement was signed on the 11th of August last year in Maseru, Lesotho. Lesotho Highlands Water Project is a bi-national project between these two countries, Lesotho and South Africa, and it's an interbasin water transfer of ultimate delivery of 70 cubic meters per second. And the phases, the initial phases that were done were five phases. We have already completed one phase, being phase 1A, Gaza Dam, the mother of them all, and Mohale Dam. Now we are going into phase two. And according to the treaty, the only one that is guaranteed by the treaty is phase one. All subsequent phases will have a separate agreement. That is why we are here today, for this particular agreement. So if there is to be a phase three, there will be another agreement, which the two parties will have to agree upon. Because even then, we will, the circumstances shall have changed. So that is why that proviso was given. And so right now, the implementation of this of the project, we as the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission, we are representing two governments. That is the government of South Africa and the government of Lesotho. So there are those, there are delegates that are sitting on the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission overseeing their own project. And on the Lesotho side, we have LHDA, Lesotho Highlands Development Authority, that is on the ground in Lesotho. On the South African side, as soon as we cross the border into South Africa, TCTA, which is the Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority, takes over all the implementation. And we oversee all that project. So one, as you know, at the time when these two projects were done, this project of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project was one of the largest engineering projects on the continent, and it was worth $8 billion US dollars at the time. The question is why the LHWP? We know that South Africa is one of those first water countries. And my brother was not, you know, so we had to build the LHWP so that we could augment the Vaal River system, and so that we can give to the millions of water, but also it's a cheap alternative source of water. And as the members will be visiting, you will see how pristine that water is. You know, you can already drink from the source. That is how pristine that water is. I'm not sure as soon as it comes into South Africa what happens.
Mixes with the acidified drainage water, and then we purify it again and we sell it. And
the opportunity is also for us, what is important is that as a neighbor, you know, the opportunity for regional development are strengthened for Lesotho, because you know Lesotho is right in the belly of South Africa. And hydroelectricity for Lesotho has also been one of the major components. And we are hoping that when you come, we'll be able to take you also to the hydropower station so that you can see that. One of the most important things is about project governance. Government of Lesotho, as I had already said, you know, in South Africa, has the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission. We are your mouthpiece there. And then on the implementation arm, we have Lesotho Highlands Development Authority and TCTA. And one of the most important things, if we can go to the next slide, is that the accountability, as I've already indicated, Lesotho Highlands Water Commission, the various delegations, the RSA delegations take instructions from our DWA ministry and the department, because that is who we represent. And so it is Lesotho on the other side. And also Lesotho Highlands Water Development Authority, as well as TCTA, they have their own board. But what is also interesting is that a few years ago, when we were starting the project, Lesotho tended to want to have all the, they had the ministries, you know, the DGs sitting on the board. But since we have been, you know, implementing the project, there's been now a combination of the Basutus and South Africans sitting on the board of the Lesotho Highlands Development Authority. So there's a good cooperation at this point in time. And so who pays for water? A lot of times people make a mistake and say, this is taxpayers' money. Yes, in a way it is, because water users are also taxpayers, but this is strictly water users. That is who pays for this project.
So it's off budget.
It's off budget and handled by TCPA on behalf of the group. Okay, the next one, please. The next one. That is now phase one. What the project has done, it has changed the course of water and the direction. Instead of water going sort of to the south, we have now changed the water to go towards the north, the course of water.
I'll show you that on the screen there.
And that is over there. So it goes up towards the north.
Water flowing upwards?
Yes. Through, yes. And all this is done as through...
I thought we'll need a leap of faith.
And so we started with Kase Dam. And then we have the Mohale Dam, and then we have all the tunnels that takes us up towards the Ash River. But right here at Butabute, we have the Muela Hydropower Station. That is for the cost of Lesotho. At this point in time, it gives us about 72 megawatts. And they already have a shortage themselves. Hence, we are going to be talking about Ubong pump storage for phase two. We can move on. So this is just the overview of where we are. That is Gase over there. And that is not so clear. Maybe it's the light. The next one is and that's the Gase Dam spilling. Interestingly enough, when Gase was being built, you know, the focus at the time was that it will only spill once or twice in its lifetime. But it has already spilled more than 10 times. And it's a sight to be reckoned with. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing place to be. Okay. There we are. Yeah. Thank you.
I put these lights here.
Yeah.
Put them also off.
So when we bring you, when you come towards the end of the month, we will definitely be seeing that. However, we would have loved to you to come, you know, when it's a bit green. Right now, because we are coming out of winter, it's a bit not so beautiful, not so green. But what can we do? We don't control weather. But it would be beautiful to see. And also the levels have gone a bit down. So that is the Gase Dam. And then we'll also show you the intake tower where the water from also. What is also interesting is that the two dams are sort of, you know, built on the same level. So Gase Dam and Mohale Dam. That water, if Gase is sort of almost full to capacity, we can always open the tunnel for water to flow into Mohale Dam so that it doesn't spill. The same can be done for Gase. So that is how it is. Because all of it, you know, it's about the... We are not even pumping it, you know. It's gravity, it's all by gravity. That is the beauty of engineering. Mm-hmm. That is, in fact, when you look at that dam, the Gulta Dam is a double concrete curvature. As you have seen, it's a double concrete curvature. We take you there, you walk up there, so that you can see we have seen it, we have been there. And then this one is a rock-filled dam. And all that you see, you know, the zigzag that you see is the road that takes you up to the, you know, to the top of the of the dam. Right there. Let's go back with one. So we it's right here, and then you go, you know, as you can see, even, you know, the spillway is a different spillway as it is. So, but even, you know, all that rock that you see, the mountain was excavated. The mountain was excavated, and that, you know, all the rocks that came in there were also compacted in different ways. I'm no engineer, but I do have a brother here who's an engineer on both sides who can also tell, but I can also send my own on that side. But most importantly is that, you know, after having done all that, the environment, you can never ever see where all the excavation was done. You know, all the plants we rescued all the plants, and we have what we call the Gulta Botanical Garden. All the traditional doctors, all the, you know, the people who knows about all the environment, the plants, you know, all the medicinal plants, whatever, they were brought in so that they can help to, you know, rescue those plants. And then we have them ethically. And there was a program that was, you know, done where they were helping the people to have, you know, to know exactly what was happening about these plants. And we have a beautiful also arrow, you know, the spiral arrow that we have, and it's one of its kind. So that was also rescued. Next page, please. So that is the Muela Hydropower Plant, and it's one of those plants. It goes, it's about 3 stories down, 300 meters down. That is where the plant is. So that is the Muela Hydropower for the account of Lesotho. And they also have a close cooperation with South Africa, that is through Eskom. And there's also an MOU that was also signed between South Africa's Department of Energy as well as Lesotho. And just for interest sake, we thought we should also indicate to you, this power line is one of the highest power lines in the continent of Africa. 3028 meters high above sea level. That is that power line. And we always say that we know we are, the next one, to see, we said on this one, we were able to build two bridges for the price of one. Chairperson, that one says, two bridges for the price of one. No, it's just one. It's just one bridge.
See which side the water is.
That is the water there, and there's the bridge itself. That is the Madiba Matsu Bridge. Okay. Madiba Matsu, yes. And one of the things that we had to do.
Oh, it's the shadow of
it. Yes, that's the shadow. Building two for the price of one, with a reflection. Yes. And this one, we had to also build, you know, the access roads as well as the access bridges for the communities because of the impeded access that we had to do when building the dam. So as you can see, there is the Ntatewiti Donkey there. That is the major mode of transportation, the 4x2. not 4x4 service. That is the spiral alloy here, and just for interest sake, usually the female, I'm not sure, but the female and the male, they will, you know, spiral in different directions. So that is how it is. We also have then, that's the botanical garden that we have with various of more than 2,000 species of plants that
but
we
if
have.
You say the female spirals in the wrong direction?
I'm not sure. And the male also spirals in the wrong direction.
Yeah, the
male
one.
You never know which is the right one.
The female one is right.
Uh-huh.
Must say, nature really imitates real life, you know.
Definitely. So that was just an overview of phase one. Now we are coming into phase two, and also giving you... So... right here we have Mohale Dam and we have Gase. So now the new dam is called Budihadi Dam.
Mm-hmm.
And Budihadi Dam is going to be 163.5 meters high. And it's going to be a rock-filled dam just like Mohale Dam. And it will have a saddle dam which is about 45 meters high. And there will be also a tunnel that connects Budihadi Dam to Gase Dam. That will be 38.2 kilometers long and 5.2 meters in diameter. And from there, then the Gubong pump storage is going to be over there. And the Gubong pump storage will have Gase Dam as the lower dam, and there will be a new dam that they are going to be building, which is 101 meters high. And it will have a shorter tunnel of 6.3 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is for the account of the government of Lesotho for augmentation of their own. So this is just an aerial... Okay. This is just an aerial view of from Google Map of what Budihadi Dam is going to look like. So that is Budihadi Dam, and that is where the... And then this is the dam where it's going to be. When you come, we will bring you to the site so that you can remember where you have been. But it won't be in the, you know, it won't be filled because we haven't done. We'll take you to the virgin land so you can see exactly where the dam is going to be built. And this is just the cross section of the area, and to show you where the TBM are going to be coming. We are going to have is it two or three? Two TBM, one coming from the south and the north. That is the tunnel boring machine.
Oh.
It's huge TBM, tunnel boring machine. There will be one coming from the other side and then the other, so that they will be meeting somewhere in the middle. And then also be the vent shaft over there. That is the tunnel boring machine over. This is how it's going to be. Hopefully God will keep us all alive so that we will be able to come and see when it breaks through. And so that is the engineering part. So these are some of the things that are going to be done. The advanced infrastructure, we are going to have roads. And one of the things that I think I ought to just share with the committee is that with phase one, there was one thing that we had to learn, you know, because there was no blueprint for us at the time. But with phase one had given us an opportunity to say, learn what you have, you know, use the lessons learned from phase one into phase two. And that's exactly what we did. And at the time, what we also did, for phase one, there were you know, we had a budget, but this time around, with the colleagues, we have even gone, you know, to an extent where we have said, let's break down each and every cost accordingly, so that nobody can come up with and just spring up and say, no, now we need to build another road there. We have even agreed in terms of the types of roads that are going to be built. If it's going to be tarred, and if it is going to be gravel, you know, all that we have already agreed, you know, as well as the percentages in terms of cost allocation that has already been agreed upon. So this is Budi Hadi, this is how it's going to be, and all these little black things that you are seeing there, those are the bridges that we are going to build on the main road as well as on the feeder road. Because one, as you know, as you build the dam, there will also be impeded access. You also want to ensure that the communities that live around the area will always have access and be able to, you know, to cross the dam as they do their daily chores. And one of the things that we are also very, very strict about is the biophysical. We are also ensuring that there are mitigation measures. We have already done the EIA, which was passed by the Department of Environment in Lesotho, and now we are going to do the extensive one as we embark onto the phase two. You know. And we have done, you know, there is a small fish in Lesotho which is protected by law and also internationally. It's called the Malugimino, very small. And that fish is one of those that has to be conserved. And we have informed the world and we have assured the world that we'll always make sure that it does not come to extinction. So that is some of the things we are doing. In terms of resettlement, can we go back with you? Yeah. And then also one, the in-stream flow requirement. As you know that, you know, when we dam the river, then it means somehow downstream, there are going to be impacts. But I also need to go a little bit here to say that the in-stream flow requirement was one of those programs that was started with the Lesotho project, Lesotho Highlands Water Project. And the World Bank, also when it did its review, it gave its accolades to the Lesotho Highlands. And as a result, they are also asking all these other countries that are building them to also follow that. As well as the Commission on Dams, that we learned a lot from the Commission on Dams, especially when it comes to environmental matters. And so the same has also been learned from the project. And there are, at this point in time, 17 villages that are going to be directly affected. And that is about 534 households, and five villages will be fully submerged. So it means that those are the villages that would have to definitely be relocated within the area. And 12 are partially affected. And these are in the area of Mokoto. Yeah, it's in the area of Mokoto, and the town itself is excluded. However, the next one could be okay. So this is just a breakdown that we are giving to you. The arable land there, that is 1125 hectares, trees, because we also compensate for the various trees that we are giving, that people have, as well as the type of homes that people have, the obdake,
as
blood well as the Rwanda Velehese
and the blood diet
and the AM and then Maplatana, Malaini, those are the houses that we have, as well as the crawls. So businesses and government facility, when we talk about the government facility here, there is the a prison that will have to also, it's going to be completely inundated, not with the prisoners though. So so it will be the building, then the prisoners will be rescued. Put in the next one. So that is for the account of South Africa. That one, everything that we have now done, that is the account of South Africa. This one, the pump storage scheme, is for the account of Lesotho, even though we as the commission are responsible to oversee the whole project.
Okay, let's skip that one.
We are skipping it.
Chair, thank you. That will take take us through to the just through to the cost and implementation program. If Zodra could just touch on that as well, if you want to just to also reflect on the organisational structure. Just to go to that one, Zodra. The last move on.
In terms of the organizational structure, what we have done here, as I said, we have learned lessons from the previous page. That was page one. That's page 19 where we are now. Yes, page 19 of the presentation. As we say, we have the government of South Africa and we put them the treaties. And we have that our Department of Water Affairs and then the Commission, you know, and the two ministers who are responsible. And the most important thing that I would want for the committee to be aware of is that in the past we never had this independent oversight. That independent oversight for us was very, very important. And according to Article 16, we had to bring it, because one of the things that we said, lessons learned. We know that when you look at the phase one, the only thing that a lot of people will always remember phase one of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project is because of the corruption. You know, it was because of the corruption. But it also, we need to also indicate the most important thing that the two governments did, the will to take on the two, you know, to take on the corporations that were involved in this bribery scheme. Mm. And as you are aware, that the ex-LHBA CEO was in prison for 10 years, he's out, and we also have another delegate who is in prison as we speak. There's one also trying to work his way out of there. So that was done. But from our side, we said also it was important that we put, you know, checks and balances so that we ensure that that does not come in phase two. And that independent oversight body, we are presently busy working on the terms of reference. And because that body is going to be independent and is going to be looking on technical as well as on financial matters. And looking at us, it starts with us as the commissioners themselves, as well as the LHBA, and it looks also in terms of the tender process, where it starts, and to the award of that. They'll be looking at that. But this is over and above the panel of engineering experts, as well as the panel of environmental aspect, who will also be looking at how we are doing our things. And also what we are doing this time around, we also have the phase two technical committee. That is technical committee, it's a subcommittee of the Lesotho Highlands Highlands Development Authority Board. And that is a technical committee that is going to be looking at this. And we also have a divisional manager that will also be the phase two divisional manager that will also be reporting to the board as well as to the CEO. And then the LHWC also sits on that board as observers. That we had to, because what was very important, and I think we need to also indicate that we as South Africans, we are also very, very aware, but also made it our business to ensure that the interests of South Africa are also taken care of. More so because what is certain at this point in time is that the water transfer scheme is going to be built. So that the water transfer scheme is for the account of South Africa. And all these had to be put in place so that we ensure that all the checks and balances, and to ensure that when you sign things, you are also aware that at least, you know, we have put a lot of mechanism to ensure that everything runs accordingly. And the last one will be the PMU. The PMU is the project management unit, and it's going to be staffed by about 30 people. And as and when a program is completed, people will always be phasing away, rather than just, you know, ballooning the current structure. So this project is going to be about 43 million for the next 10 years. That's it. So that is the structure. Then we have the chief executive, and we are about to appoint the chief operating officer, and then the new one also is the divisional manager for phase two, as well as these. Current one, the division manager for strategic corporate services, as well as the operations DOD, that is for engineering, and also the field offices we have already. And then hydropower, and then here will also, for PMU, it will be engineering, social and environmental matters, financial and communications, and as well as contract and legal matters. These are all our responsibility. Will also be overseeing that will be within the PMU.
Mm-hmm.
And just as the roles, as we have said, the TCTA this time around will not be playing a major role in terms of construction. The role that they will be playing will be that of raising funding, as you heard that it's going to be off balance sheet. So that is what they will be working for. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Just to put into context the size of the project as well, The commission, together with the LHDA, they'll be supervising a contract at 2010 prices of about 15.4 billion, and you'll find that on page 18. So it's quite a substantial project, of which 7.8 billion at December 2010 costs. The South African portion for the transfer scheme is 7.8 billion. and the hydropower scheme is 7.6 billion. On page 18. So those costs are carried by the respective governments, but the governing structure in terms of the commission and the LHDA will have an oversight over that entire project. And then in terms of the program implementation, we would hope, you know, subject to the approval of the treaty once it's been approved by the parliaments of both countries, we would be ready to get the project management unit in place to start in October this year. And if all goes according to plan, to have first water delivery by November 2020. So, Chair, that's just some high-level salient facts around the project as well. And then, as you indicated up front, I will stop short of going through the articles of the agreement. You have got that document, and we've really just given you an overview of what the project is about. Thanks, Chairperson.
I've allowed us to go into some detail here because this is a bit of an unusual agreement in the sense it's not just a broad, fluffy agreement of you will do this and so on. This is a very specific agreement and specific costs, and so it was good. And also because we're visiting it, it gives us some oversight of what we're going to. Any questions, any issues? Mr. Morgan? Just to also say, if you look at the package, there is an anti-corruption policy in the package, which is quite interesting if you go through it. Mr. Morgan?
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. I really just want to make some comments. Thank you for the detailed briefing. I really do appreciate it. I thought it was very useful, and Chair, thanks for indulging the presenter as well. I agree we need to come up to speed with the details of the project, and I'm sure we'll learn more about it when we visit. The Chair, just in his comments there, mentioned the anti-corruption stuff. It's very good to see. Thank you for that. Indeed, that did sour phase one, and I'm glad to see that it's included in the article with a subjoined policy as well. So that must be commended. And I know the South African government in particular, but I mean certainly both governments and the minister have taken a strong line on this particular issue. I mean, I remember last year there was an issue where a certain gentleman popped up, and an end was put to that attempt to get involved. So thank you for that. Needless to say, it is obviously, you know, the one thing that I think a lot of keen watchers will look at, and that is the awarding of the contract. And so I know you will do it in a way which is fair and transparent, but indeed I, you know, obviously urge you to do this, to take it very, very seriously. One of the things, Chair, just possibly which we can note for our visit in September is an idea, is that we could get a briefing on that process of the contract, and, you know, what form they will take. This is a massive build project, so to what extent is it, you know, one major player with subcontractors or a variety of contractors? These are things which are relevant, even if those processes haven't been concluded. Just to say, of course, Chair, I mean, I know you said it, but it's just worth saying, and I know possibly we can just write it into the report. You know, I fully support the agreement, and I hope the committee will as well. But it is obviously, and I think we would all agree, it is a strange concept to have an agreement presented after governments have signed it. I know it is pending ratification, but it puts pressure on us, you know, to agree to it. So I'm not pointing fingers at anyone, but it is, you know, you might think that there is a possibility somewhere around the signing of the contract to actually do an initial briefing. Especially signing of the agreement between the government of an initial briefing. I think that that would do better justice to a process. I have no doubt, Chair, if we thought the protocol was ridiculous, we would reject it anyway. So I'm not saying we're powerless, but I think there is a point there which is worth making.
Even the law advisor makes the point. Chief state law advisor.
Yeah.
Makes the point that by the time even they look at it, except for textual changes, there's no real input of everything. I mean, they in there, if you look at their report, they say, I hope you've borne this in mind, I hope you've borne this in mind. But even they are hamstrung to the extent that they can. And that is because that's how the process works. And I just think, I don't know how one changes it. But in any case, sorry.
Chair, you wrote, I mean, you mentioned it before, and as you said, you've worked on many of these before. But if we can ask the people's representatives to make the final call, if it makes sense to consult them at a slightly earlier stage. But I get it, I understand the complexities of the problem, but I think it is something for noting. I think we should write it in our report, which will accompany in some form or another. I think that just leads me to say I look forward to visiting with the committee in a few weeks' time and learning more about the process. And I think that there is a need for this committee to provide rigorous oversight of this project. It's a big project. Dams are by their very nature controversial all around the world. And I see the need for this also. It will arrive in 2020 or then and thereabouts, but it's obviously necessary for the economic development in South Africa and more cynically to dilute other more dirty water in our water courses. But I trust that the Department of Water will have sorted out that problem long before the first water from the new dam arrives. So we need it. And I think monitoring things like making sure it is on time, that it is on budget, that the contracts are fair, that there is indeed no corruption, that the human considerations are taken into account. And you quite correctly point out that people are displaced. It's inevitable when that damage happens. So those things are necessary. And I think the other point is that this is, the point worth pointing out is that this is a binational agreement signed in the democratic South Africa, and the previous one wasn't. And by all that, all I mean is that I think the accountability model we have as Parliament is significantly advanced compared to obviously what existed in Haiti. So I trust that you will be open to scrutiny on these matters and your regular briefs to this committee. The best of luck with this particular project. Thank you, Chairperson.
Ms. Zigalala?
Chairperson, it was good listening to this young lady presenting to us this afternoon. You know, our girls are coming up so beautifully these days, you know. Yes, I love it. And that we are given that chance, you know. She's between the two guys. And she's just giving it with ease. Chairperson.
She's like this cactus here. What is it? Well, it goes in the wrong direction. It goes in the opposite direction of men.
Chairperson,
very interesting.
I heard you. Gigi, I'm happy for you this afternoon because we're discussing, you know, good things about water for a change, yeah? Progress.
Quality.
understand that when you get to the Sufi Jefferson, you will just get, you know, from the source, you will drink from the source. Then there was comparison. I wonder, what about South Africa? But now, Morgan has said much. I don't know this one. Look at me. But now, I heard you mentioning that you have the classy botanical garden. You also have a garden in the suit. Ah, that's great. I'm in love with the botanical garden. You said you have got this medicinal plant around the garden. Yes, in the garden. Do you have a lingana? Oh, so it means one will just try and grab something.
Corruption.
No, it's not corruption. You know, Chatterton, we call it umshonyane. During our days when we were babies, we were never taken to the doctors. Lingana and Mshonyane was the best to treat a baby. You know? So, when the committee gets to Lesotho, when you visit that garden, you will, some of us as elderly, senior citizens, we are going to be so excited because we shall be seeing these medicinal,
If they're truly medicinal, that's fine.
I
saw a few of the men get quite happy because they thought it's...
I think they were worried that something
like Viagra or something.
And really, truly, I think that they will come across the one that the chair is mentioning.
Well, if it is there, then we'll come a bit quicker.
The spiral
We'll visit much quicker, don't worry.
The spiral aloe, do you get it wherever? All provinces? Do they have? It's strictly.
That's a botanical garden, if I may say. It's the only alpine, garden. There are only two. One is in Germany, and this one is the other one.
So, just to conclude, it has been wonderful, Chairperson, that they are here to prepare the committee for the oversight to the suit. Things will work out very easy when the committee gets back. Thank you.
Dr. Huang?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the speaker for the presentation. I think I just hear from your highlight about the first one is corruption. You also had the other anti-corruption prevent for the first two. So I'd like to hear from you how we can prevent for the first two for the legal anti-corruption for the U.S. strategy. But depending to your first two is cost about 15.4 million billion. And you relocated for the little resettlement is over the five energy and I think they involved for 16,560 people for the resettlement. From your social cost, you say it's about 363 million. This is involved inside for the resettlement for this cost. How these people can help you in the relocation to the other village? Well, depending to the for the dam, phase two. Then I just like to know this phase two is a phase one because already passed. Phase two because this project is involved two government side. from South Africa side, I'd like to know phase two is beneficial the more than to the other country or the and the job creation is how many job creation from the phase two. Because your project is also quite big here. So we also from committee side I like it interesting how many jobs can create for interface two. Then your anti corruption how you can prevent. I'd like to get more the information. Thank you.
Can I just add one thing? I see in the report of the law advisors that they say they did suggest some amendments. Were those amendments effective? If you can just answer that, okay? All right, those are the questions. Let's have a response to DG.
Okay.
I will respond to the anti-corruption policy and how it's going to be implemented. And Leon Trump will respond to job creation. And Pete, if there's in terms of money, perhaps in terms of how the impact of the project, especially for phase one, how it was, if you can respond to that, that would be great. On anti-corruption, the policy itself is we are already applying it. Each and every member of the LHDA, Lesotho Highlands Development Authority, has had to be consulted on this because the policy as it is does not just apply to the contractors out there, but it also applies to all of us, even the employees of the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission, the board itself, as well as the employees of the Lesotho Highlands Development Authority. So that we are already working on. So that has already, the consultation has already been concluded. And also from our side, what we did, we also consulted our own state law advisor here in South Africa to also look through it and advise us. So was the World Bank also looked at it, and TCTA, various stakeholders looked at it and they said, this is the way to go. And in terms of the current preparatory works that we have done, each of those companies that were appointed, they had to also align themselves with that anti-corruption. They were given it, and they looked through, you know, and then they signed. And if there was anything, they had to also own up and declare if they were either under investigation or they were ever investigated. So if a person just comes willingly to say, yes, I was investigated for 1, 2, 3, but nothing was found of it, at least they have already said. And we also have lawyers, like on the contract on the PMU, we had the consortiums coming through. All those consortiums and all those individuals, we had, you know, people going also through Lesotho as well as South Africa looking through those companies whether they were all kosher. So that has already been done. That is ensuring that at least from our side, whatever, you know, we can do, we do. And I'm sure somewhere, somehow, there will be a little sense here and there. I'm not sure how we can close all those, but from our point, we have tried as much as we can. And also with that, the oversight body that I talked about, as well as the panel of engineering experts, comprises of experts in engineering from all over the world. So right now, the
ones that we have a member from Brazil, we have a member from two members from America. These are the specialists in their own area, you know, in the field of dams and tunnels. So those guys will know. And when it comes to working and compiling even the tender bulletins, they will be also looking through that. And also there will be part and parcel of the panel that will be also looking at who is being appointed with the necessary skills and all that. That we have done. That will also be done. So that's ensuring from our side that is what we have done.
Thank you, Chair. I just would like to add one thing that Dr. Dlamini, I think we have to add is that the whole project is scrutinized on an annual basis by international external auditing companies. It's like a private company that's being audited, and for since all the years that I've been there, we've had a clean audit. There are some comments, of course, in the management letter, but those are management type of comments. If we come back to the question about how many jobs are envisaged to be created, we are estimating about 4,500 to 5,000 jobs on a temporary basis. Let's just explain that the infrastructure, the roads and the camps and the power lines will first be built. And then, of course, those labourers will then be retrenched after that. Some of those labourers do then continue because they've learned certain skills through to the dam and tunnel works as well. At the end of once construction is completed for operations and maintenance, we are looking between 80 and 100 people that will be added to the staffing. It also depends on what time of the year, of course, because we have a compensation responsibility where grain is distributed or cash money in terms of compensation is distributed. Then, of course, one takes on a few extra staff at that point in time. The structure that was shown on the screen comes down to the fact that the expert knowledge is retained in the project management unit for as long as the construction happens. Once that's finished, they demobilize and it carries the responsibility is then taken over by the operations and maintenance division that's already in place. If we look at what the lessons learned and the experience that we have is that since if you compare it to phase one, the construction of almost everything can be done by self-occupants. Here and there's an expert designer maybe necessary, but we foresee that the bulk of the work, the design, the supervision as well as the construction can be done by self-occupants. In the agreement, there's a specific clause that deals with the procurement of staff where the order of precedence is first to the citizens and then South Africa and then only we go to the region and very lastly we go beyond the great waters. And that is contrary to what has happened in phase one and I think it's a very positive spin off. We've taken many engineers and other disciplines through the training sessions or through the training of phase one and I'll plow back the work for phase two. Thank you.
Chair, if I could respond to the questions which you raised around the comments made by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. If you have a look at the recommendation made by the State Law Advisor, which was in June of last year, the agreement was only finalized sometime in August. And those comments were taken into account. If you look at the preferential procurement, you look at Article 10, subsections F, G, and H, which cover the processes there. With regard to the prevention and combating of corrupt activities, you'll see already we've got the corruption, anti-corruption policy in place to deal with that. And then, of course, the provisions of the PFMA, which were mentioned there, the the agreements also are tested with our national treasury, just to in terms of our own financial arrangements, and the annexure on taxation, for argument's sake, the national treasury and SARS have made specific inputs into the preparation of those annexures in that regard. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Charlie, we're going to go and visit them.
No, Chairperson, I think he's asking the social cost, how we can deal with the social cost of 363 million. For regarding for relocation, he didn't answer.
Yeah, but I'm saying for the passing of this agreement, we don't need that detail at the moment. We just allowed it to be brief. We're going to go and visit them at the end of September, then we can ask all those questions. Then we're going to look at the detail, okay? So that's why I'm allowing the questions. What we're trying to do is get the agreement accepted, so for that we don't need all the details, okay? All right, so I'm going to read the report, see if you're happy with it, and then we'll pass it. Mr. Morgan's issue is, we want to add something else in a separate report, we can do that. Maybe Ms. Darwood can go and look at drafting a short report, just to say that the committee is aware that the structure of Section 231 allows the executive to negotiate and agree to agreements. However, the next clause then says that Parliament must approve that agreement. So there's a bit of a conundrum for the, say, the committee feels there's a bit of a conundrum that when the, it's very clear in law who, or in the Constitution, who negotiates it, but there's also clear that Parliament has a role to approve. By the time agreements come to Parliament, there's never been any briefings on them. One is not aware of them, and the process then becomes a bit of a rubber stamp process. And what we want to recommend is that, without in any way offending against the Constitution, that departments, or our departments, two departments, should at least during the process of negotiating agreements where they are part of international agreements, should find ways of briefing the committee at earlier stages, so at least the committee is aware of it and can give whatever inputs they have to, without undermining the role of the executive. Something like that, Ms. Dawood, and we'll have a look at it, okay? We'll do it as a separate one applying to both departments, okay? All right. So, the report of the Portfolio Committee on Water and Environmental Affairs on the agreement between the government of the Republic of South Africa and the government of Kingdom of Lesotho, dated 5 September 2012. The Portfolio Committee on Water and Environmental Affairs, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the agreement between the government of the Republic of South Africa and the government of the Kingdom of Lesotho on the phase 2 of the Lesotho Islands water project, recommends that the House, in terms of section 231(2) of the Constitution, approve the said international agreement. I think when you say Constitution, there's an act that says you must say Constitution of 1996. No, not as amended. You must go and look. There's a bill that was passed. There was a bill that was an act that was passed by justice. How you deal with constitution and constitution amendments, and there it says, when you refer to the constitution, you don't refer to the act number like other bills. You say the constitution of 1996, I think. So just make sure you get that right. Just go and. Speak to the Department of Justice, Johanda Lange, he's in this building here. He'll help you out to refer to the Constitution. It's a special way. You don't refer to it like other bills. There's a special act that is passed. Okay. Everyone agree? Agreed? There's a quorum here? We're quorum? 7, 2, 4, 6, 7? 7? Agreed. Okay. Unanimously agreed. Thank you. Thank you very much. You are excused, sir. Sir.
Chair, let me thank the committee. there's a planned big shutdown for October and November. Hopefully when the committee arrives, it will be before that has taken place. And
that's why we're coming in September. That's why we're coming in September.
That process, Chair, which is covered in the procedure, says it's of a technical administrative nature. It's going through the CAB memo, and tomorrow will be with the DG's clusters. I just thought I would mention as a case, so at least there's something we've heard ahead of others, even before the cabinet, for that plan to shut down.
No, that's good.
And you don't read in the papers about it, that we sat with them, they never mentioned. Thank you.
Now, I think that's the kind of information that we need, so that it equips us and we understand what's happening. Okay. Tuleka would keep talking about the trip, and let's hope it can take place. If it doesn't take place now, you'll never see us. So that's not a threat. That's just the truth. Okay, thank you very much. So we'll see you next Tuesday, 9:30. Thank you, DG. All right. The other department step forward. Mr. Mkateni, are you the big boss of this team?
Yes, Chair.
The Makulu boss. You're the one that gets all the bucks. And you allow our little rhinoceroses to be killed. How? And you get such a big salary and you still allow them to get killed. Oh, man. Hey, it's terrible, you know? I want to bring in a scheme with your bonus thing. Every rhino that gets killed, we take a certain percentage of that salary of yours. No, I'm protecting the rhinos. You should actually pay me. Okay. Thank you. All right. Now, of course, the agreements you're dealing with are completely different. They're very technical. They're not of a practical nature to be dealt here. So really just take us through the main details and if there's anything special in the agreement and what the state law advisor says, so we can make it quite short and pithy, okay? Whoever's giving the input.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Which one are we dealing with first?
We'll do the African Convention.
African Convention. Okay. Let's just look for it, please, hang on. African Convention. I would say one at the end here, okay. All right. Pambili.
I will ask Mr. Stuart Mengon to take the committee through that one presentation. Stuart.
Which one? Good afternoon, Chair. Thank you for this opportunity to present this to the portfolio committee members. Basically, the presentation essentially is going to touch on the background, the main objectives, the status, the strategic focus, implementation, consultation, and recommendations. Chair, basically as a background, the African Convention on the Conservation of Nature and Natural Resources is one of the oldest conventions. The original one was the OAU Treaty of 1968, but because of the developments in the environmental field globally and within the continent, and the change from the OAU to the AU, there was a change in the convention, or there was a recognition rather, that the convention should be revised. And it was revised in July 2003 and finally adopted by the African Union in Maputo. So hence, this convention has not come into force as yet. The convention essentially strives to conserve and improve soil, control erosion and land use, conserve and utilize develop water resources, prevent pollution, protect fauna and flora, through sustainable utilization, ensuring sound management practices, as well as the issue of access and benefit sharing of the resources. It also goes on to deal with the issue of hunting, controlling trophies, and preventing essentially the convention is not enforced at the moment. It requires 15 countries to ratify it, and will come into force 30 days after that. But essentially South Africa would, the intention is to send a positive message to other African states that have either signed or are in the process of signing the convention to also sign and ratify the convention so it can come into force, so we can have an African convention to conserve and manage our nature and natural resources. In terms of the strategic focus, the 12th session of the African Ministerial Conference on the Environment, or AMSEM, encouraged African countries to ratify and accede to this convention. South Africa at that point assumed the presidency of AMSEM, but at that stage we were still looking at the technical aspects and the pros and cons of signing and ratifying this convention. Basically, the signal that South Africa could send to the rest of the African continent by ratifying this convention is that Africa should have a continental-wide convention of its own to conserve and manage its own natural resources. The argument that for and against this were quite lengthy. One of the issues was that many of the African countries, like other countries in the world, are signatories to multilateral environmental agreements, such as the Convention on Biological Diversity, the Convention to Combat Eradication, the Climate Change Convention, etc., etc. And what would the benefits be to have another convention that was dealing with similar issues, but on the African continent only? The other issue was the operability of the convention itself, the fact that the secretariat has not been established because the convention hasn't come into force, and also the financial implications if the convention and the secretariat are established. Then again, there's the issue of implementation. There were some discussions around whether how readily implementable this is, given that the constraints for finance and capacity that we have on the continent. However, despite all of this, we felt that the benefits far outweigh the questions around it, and to have an African convention which the continent can own of its own, which links to African common positions on climate change, African common positions on the biological diversity convention and the identification. This convention will strengthen the continent's unity around these issues and provide basically an instrument where we can formulate common African positions on these which are of mutual interest, which we found to be very effective in the climate change negotiation. In terms of implementation, an interdepartmental committee would be established once we proceed with the ratification of the convention, if that's the feeling of the House.
I like that idea.
Thanks.
We should do it with more of these things. You know, these things are passed and then there's no real implementation. So I hope this helps. Okay.
Thank you. Organizational personnel, like I've stated already, it needs a continental secretariat, and we feel that the regional office in Africa, which houses the secretariat of the African Ministerial Conference on the Environment, or AMSEM, could play a vital role in this process and could actually, in fact, operate as the secretariat of the convention for the Ministerial Conference on the Environment, because there would be a lot of commonality in the processes, and in fact AMSEM could take ownership of this convention. In terms of the financial implications, the convention itself states that this still needs to be determined, but would be determined on either the UN or the AU scale, proportional scale of assessment, and would come up with a figure for membership fees. Then when consider hosting the secretariat or playing a more active role in the institutional arrangements of the convention in the long term would also be something which we need to consider. In terms of communication, we would rely on the GCIS and other government communication portfolios, the Environmental Affairs website, and exhibitions and so on, to promote the aims of the objectives of the convention, as well as to promote awareness around the implications and so on, and South Africa's ratification of the convention. Vulnerable groups, we felt that this convention would support vulnerable groups, particularly rural communities, and women who depend directly on the utilization of natural resources, such as firewood, water, and sustaining households, that it would strengthen that. In terms of security, there is an element here where the convention deals with the trade of nature and natural resources. We feel that this convention would aim to strengthen South Africa's and SADC's efforts to curb illegal trade in wildlife and poaching of animals, particularly rhinos in our case, but also we have other animals such as African snakes and fauna and flora, cycads, endangered plants, and so on. In terms of the consultation, we have gone through an extensive consultation process with government agencies such as SANBI, SANParks, environmental authorities of the provinces. We presented the convention to the African Renaissance Committee in 2010 in October, and then we've gone through the processes of the ICTS, the International Cooperation and Trade and Security, DG's cluster, and also to the Cabinet Committee in December 2010. So in terms of the recommendations, it's recommended that the...
Before you get there, did the state law advisors do an agreement, their usual checking of this and give you a report? I don't find it amongst my papers, so maybe I'm missing it somewhere.
Yes, Chair, they did.
Did we get a copy?
We received comments. Yes, we will forward a copy to you.
Let me have a look what it looks like. I can't find it in any of our documents. Yet. Did you put it in this one? Huh? Not there. Where is it? Let's just see what they said. I mean, it's important that you just tell us what they said and what you've done. You know?
Yeah, basically, we got comments from the Department of Justice and the State Law Advisor. They said the convention was not in conflict with either domestic or international law provisions.
No, nothing else?
Not much else.
And is there no self-executing clause in this agreement?
In terms of the... that it would come into...
there are some clauses of some agreements that self-executing clauses, whatever they want to have self-executed. Has this agreement got any of those clauses? Or is it just one of those that says the parties must look after their soil, the parties must look after their animals? Is it one of those agreements? Or are there self-executing clauses?
So the only clause that I could think of that would deal with this is that it has a conference of the parties, that member states would be party to that, and that there shouldn't be any it shouldn't interfere with any of the member states' international obligations to other treaties and conventions.
So there's a decision-making structure of parties. So adopt rules and procedures. Two-thirds majority. All right, so now that's a bit unusual. You also said there's no secretariat, but there is a secretariat clause here.
Yes, Chair, there's no existing secretariat at this point. But obviously...
Well, what it says, but there will be one created. And how do we pay for that? Because it now says that the The interim secretariat is the chairperson of the African Union. So Mrs. Minister Khuzana Zuma will soon be the chairperson of the secretariat.
Yes, Chair, that's what it says.
But then it may have financial implications, because I'm sure they'll create it there in clause 17, no, 27. A secretariat is established.
Yes, Chair, as I was stating in my presentation, we do not have an idea of exactly what the financial implications
would
be.
So you can't really
at
say
this point, but it would
well,
be
maybe
on
that,
the AU,
that would have
AU
been more accurate if you said it like that, okay? Because you said there is no secretariat, which I understand, but you know, it is there. The second thing is this liability clause is interesting. Could you explain to us what you think this is going to be? Have you seen this liability clause? Clause 24. The party shall as soon as possible adopt rules and procedures concerning liability and compensation of damages related to matters covered under this convention. And in other places it actually creates duties that if there's something happening in your country you must report to the other country. So it's fascinating. This could become something big, this, if not lead to a Second World War, a Third World War. Mr. Mkhitani?
I think, Chair, you are correct to raise this. This is one of the reasons why you end up with protocols under these conventions. Because if something is contentious, that's where you end up with a protracted negotiation to lift exactly that. I think the point we are making, I think it's one area we need to watch in South Africa. In the first sitting of this convention, we raise this thing to be an issue for negotiation so that we can have a supplementary protocol to take care of our concerns.
Well, maybe what we need to do, subject to what members say, maybe we should ask Ms. Dawood again to draft something here that is slightly different from what she drafted as a general principle, but in this case draft and say, we note that there's a liability clause, we note there's a secretariat, we note that there's a conference of members. All these could need either turn into further agreements, rules, or protocols, and we request that the department continuously brief us as these matters are taking place to keep us in the loop, you know. So maybe we can do it specifically, because I mean this liability clause is big, and if you get the wrong wording here and give it only us to afterwards, and we see there's the wrong wording, it could really be problematic, because you can tie yourself big bucks. I mean, a poor country is not going to worry about this clause. They know they're never going to pay. But a country like South Africa, which is seen as the mama bear on the continent, has a real possibility of being asked for big amounts of money, which is fine. I mean, you know, but this has got huge implications. So particularly clause 24, this committee wants to be kept briefed about this. And this matter must please be brought to the attention of our department plus Durka. So will you draft something like that, Ms. Dawood, and discuss it with the department till you get it ready, and then you can let us have a look at it. It just seems to me, you know, because the self-executing clauses, there's clauses that automatically come into operation despite your law. I don't see those here. But these ones could become a bit more problematic. Although there is an exceptions clause here which says it won't take place in emergencies, protection of public health, but it says adopting precisely defined measures. Now, you know, already by the wording of this thing, you're creating huge problems into the future. You know, what is a precisely defined measure? I mean, one country is going to say it isn't precisely defined, therefore, you know, it shouldn't have happened. So there are consequences to this liability clause, okay? I mean, the secretariat is more a financial thing, so I'm not going to worry too much about that.
All right. Are there any, sorry, I just wanted to get clarity on those aspects. Any questions? Any comments? From members, Mr. Morgan, Mr. Swasana?
Yeah, Chair, I first set myself to your views on the liability. It concerns me. The first, my questions are probably always there. The first question is why the state is allowed to get sued here. My second question may appear on the face of it to contradict. My second question may appear on the face of it to my first question. And my second question, Chair, is I don't think the point of it at all. We are, you know, it's a wonderful treaty, I guess, that, and it's aspirational, and you know, covers every almost every possible thing in the environment. The other thing, of course, is it covers water as well, Chief.
There's
a problem I have with it. It depends on our government. Water is actually covered by another department. I mean, fortunately, it's the same minister. I don't know whether there's an implication there. Land and soil, you know.
Traditional rights of local communities.
Soil health, I don't know. That's probably partly agriculture. So there's a bit of cross, you know, one of the problems I have is that, you know, arguably, this should go before some other committee. Defense. I mean, if we're going to wage war against Lesotho, we need to protect the environment. So, and then, of course, the traditional stuff there. So I have a problem with this. Give me some assurances that this is procedurally correct, that it has come to this committee, other than the fact that there's a general conservation in the term. But the broader point is I don't get and excuse me if it sounds cynical, we are covered by massive amounts of other protocols and conventions which have international standing. And beyond that as well, we have the most advanced suite of environmental law and water law on the African continent. So while I understand the need for the continent to aspire to better governance, we are already more advanced than everyone else. Perhaps that's the answer why there aren't major reasons for climbing up to it. But, Chair, I mean, no, it seems to me to be a big wish list of aspirational things. I just don't. I don't get the point. I think these things are covered by other conventions. In some sense, I think this is the AU giving its job worth to looking busy. So, in summary, why? Why at all? Secondly, why does it take so long? Because I think the two might be linked to each other. Three, are you satisfied, state law driver satisfied, that this is the correct portfolio committee to process this? And shouldn't we, in fact, be sending this to some other committee as well, taking into account the traditional components, the water components, the agriculture components, the defense components, and the like? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Mrs. Kosana.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I was checking with these 9 countries that did not comply to the agreement of the convention of how are they going to participate on financial matters in terms of benefit. Are they going to benefit to the collective finances of the different countries, or they will be sidelined? And also on issues of security, in relation to these issues of land, animals, and whatever, and also the implementation of the program, of the collective, are they going to be passed and parcel, or will be excluded from that particular program? And also the contribution, as we are saying, there is an affiliation, in fact a membership fee, which is $40 to $50. What will happen there? Because they were not part and parcel of the agreement. What will happen with those countries? Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Dr. Huang?
From your presentation, you just mentioned for South Africa is paid this membership fee. For the other country, you say it's a 35 country will be signed with, for the convention, the reverse convention, but only 9 is a stance. Or the other 26 is not paid the membership fee, or what? Because it's not clear for us. So your funding is the problem, is the problem that not only South Africa contributes. South Africa contributes, but your operating is very difficult. But in the future, how you can arrangement for the, this sort out this problem? Is it from the AU chairperson or from the in anyway? I don't from here. I can't quite clear can make this convention is a smoothly. Yeah.
Article 21 says that a national authority must be appointed as the designated authority for this agreement. When cabinet passed it, did they decide who will be Article 21, the national authority? If not, shouldn't they do it urgently? And maybe we should raise it in our further report. On the issues of whether technically it's correct to do it in this committee. Of course, the rules of parliament allows the speaker to refer something to either one committee or to various committees. I don't think technically there's something. Whether it's advisable for us to get those comments from those committees, that's a separate question, which is not legal, but really whether it's the correct thing to do or not. So I think that's the way the rules are. So that shouldn't be problematic. Obviously, cabinet approved it for South Africa. So dealing with different things in this agreement, I think I do think though that Mr. Morgan's question will be relevant to 21, because you know to have a national authority, particularly an agreement like this that covers a whole lot of areas, you need one. National entity and authority. So let's have the response. Okay, I think those are all the issues. Please respond to them.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Why it took so long? Chair, as far as we are concerned as officials in the department, we debated this thing for a long time. When we assessed it, we realized it's a convention that is cross-cutting. All our interests and agenda as a country is covered by other conventions. The Convention on Biological Diversity, the Convention on Trade, CITES, UNCCD on Soil and Desertification, and many others. But we came to a conclusion to propose ratifications in order to be part of Africa. I must be honest, the chairperson. At the same time, it has been is seen as a way of African states discussing issues concerning environment in Africa to position itself in order to be able to negotiate with other global conventions.
And then to hold each other accountable. There's whole agreements about accountability.
Exactly. It's about everything. It's about African voice. Therefore, Chair, you as politicians, you are the commanding the right direction but for us, we saw no benefit when we analyzed it as officials in the department. Therefore, it's suffice to say, Chair, we are noting your concerns, and we are...
Were the other departments involved? Did you consult them before?
Yes, Chief Stewart, we'll talk to that.
I mean, I imagine we can't talk for 1968 when it was agreed to the first time, but at least now that we have a democracy, where the other departments consulted and agreed, well, Cabinet agreed to it, so I imagine they did agree, but whether there was a consultation process.
I'll request Stewart to respond.
Okay.
There was also, Chairperson, issue of transboundary issues that we had to deal with it here as a continent. Because for us in the Southern Deep at the same time, we are seen, as you referred earlier, to carry Africa when it comes to global discourse. Therefore, we have that responsibility at the same time. Hence, there was a proposal for us to ratify. Stewart, can you respond to have a consultation?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. In terms of the consultation process, the convention did go to the African Renaissance Committee, which has representatives of all government departments dealing with African issues. And from there, we requested comments from various departments and their views on the convention. After that, it went to the International Committee for Trade and Security, the DG's cluster, where it went through another level of consultation and presentation by the department before it went to the Cabinet Committee.
How much does this one differ from the 68? I mean, I don't need every detail, but is it like sweeping changes? Is it just the convention of parties that is really a big change, or what
The convention in principle and spirit hasn't really changed a lot from the 68 version. However, what has happened from 1968 to 2003, of course, is we've had the Rio Earth Summit in 92, we've had the Rio Conventions come out, we've had a new principle and approach to environment and sustainable development where human activities are considered, and humans are considered to be part of the environment. From there, and also the emerging issues of climate change and so on. So it was basically a modernization of the convention, mm-hmm. and to take into account the CDD and the CCD and those other Rio conventions and other multilateral environmental agreements.
And the question about the national authority, has there been one appointed?
Chair, not at this point. Not yet.
That's very odd. Usually when departments introduce this in cabinet, they also say, well, we suggest cabinet appoint us or whoever as a national authority. I mean, I'm not sure why we didn't do it.
I suppose that by implication, the Department of Environment, hence why here presenting this, will be the focal point. The assumption was that we will be the national authority to implement and be focal point for this convention.
That's legally and politically wrong. Wrong. No. We must put this in the resolution that we noted that there's a clause for the appointment of a national authority. We were informed that this hasn't taken place. Obviously, it's not vitally important now, but once the agreement becomes operative, then it's absolutely vital that people know with which authority they deal with in this country. So I think we must put it there, Ms. Dawood. What should we do? Should we, obviously this resolution is part of this so maybe we should hold over the adoption just till we've got the resolution so we can look at it as a whole package. Okay. So what we'll do is, in principle, I think we pass it. We haven't got a problem. But I think we better spell this resolution out a bit more clearly in terms of those other things that we want done. And then once we've done that, it's just a question of then, once we're happy with the resolution, just to pass it at some stage. So we'll do that as soon as possible. So everyone happy with that, Mr. Morgan?
But just a question. This comes into force with a positive 15 classification, currently 9. In your knowledge, I accept you might not know this, are there other countries on the verge of ratification? I mean, in a sense, does this require our urgency of ratification to get past the threshold? Or are we actually part of the process which might take a little longer? In a sense, the reason I'm asking the question, Chairperson, is taking so long, what is the urgency? There are a couple of questions that need to be answered a bit more. Is it particularly, are you envisaging 9 countries in the next 6 months to ratify? If you don't know the answer, I accept that. But I'm just trying to establish to what extent we have to do this right now.
Chair, Africa is always watching us. You might, as soon as we ratify, we might get other countries coming on board because South Africa is ratified. Perhaps we suspect that they are waiting to see us because we've taken too long. We've been lobbied at some point to say, why are we not ratifying? Therefore, there were those reasons that we considered. But they might be speed once they see that we've ratified.
That's the usual story with Africa. They watch South Africa. They watch South Africa, and then they. Anyways, I mean, except for the liability issue, there's nothing really controversial in here. I mean, it's really a question of you pass laws for soil erosion, you'll pass laws for this, you'll pass laws for that. I think the issue that has implications is the one where duties are created to inform others of problems in your country. And so that duty is good, but if you read it with a liability, then that starts having implications. Because clearly liability would then be, I imagine, fines and that. Now, that also is not a bad thing as such. The problem I would like to see is very clearly who will and how will it be resolved? Which court in which country? Or which, what is it going to be? I'd like to see what the agreement around that is. Because, I mean, you've got this funny other agreement we have with the land, which I think we're not a party to, but people keep raising it. This one about the land grabs and so on. What is that, the Washington Agreement or something? It's those kind of agreements where we do these things and then there's huge implications for country sovereignty and so on. So that's all that really worries me about it. I mean, as Mr. Morgan says, most of these things are covered under other more detailed agreements. This is like an overall African one that this is the minimum we expect from what countries must do. As I say, then the implications are the liability thing, which is your real issue and so on. So I think we must get that resolution drafted, Ms. Darwood, on the liability issue and then on the national authorities at least. If there's anything else when we go through the agreement, I mean, if any of you find, Mr. Morgan or anyone finds anything else which is problematic, maybe let her tell her what it is we should, and let's put that in the draft. So when we have a draft, we have one draft to discuss all those issues. Okay? And then as she drafts that, she will also, of course, consult the department so that wording and stuff and, we don't put obvious things in. All right, so as I say, in principle, it's there, but we would like some more time to look at a resolution. Okay? All right. So that report we won't do. Okay, next one is Nagoya. No, not Nagoya. Yes, Nagoya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Besides Stuart, in the team, I have on my left Dr. Mosco Marumo, but he just joined us in early August. He will be interacting more with the committee on the NEMLA bill tomorrow. And then I have Mr. Nelson Kareka, board director associates. And then I have...
Also in the NEMLA team?
Yes, also in the NEMLA team. And I get you, of course. Thank you very much. We also have Latricia, who's also in the NEMLA team. But the full scheme...
They're the defenders of the traditional leaders.
That's correct. That's correct, sir.
The two of them.
Yes. Chair, I will take the committee through the conversation. Just to say, Chair, earlier you made a comment, but I think you were correct to say sometimes we come before this committee after negotiations have taken place. I would like to mention, Chair, in the COPs themselves, you normally have what you call a segment for parliamentarians. Perhaps that segment, which happens during negotiations, we should use it to brief the portfolio committee and also encourage the members to come with officials to those meetings so that they can engage other parliamentarians. Like now, Chair, in front of me, I have an invitation by the government of Seychelles and the secretariat of the CBD inviting parliamentarians to participate in a workshop on this same Nagoya thing, is an awareness raising thing, towards in September. In Seychelles, yes.
You see, what is it use that you've got it there, and we've not got it?
We circulated immediately, Chair. When I got it, yes. I said, must be circulated.
Where? I've never seen it. We haven't seen something like it.
You didn't want us.
That's like, I mean, when you talk like that, that's just useless to us. As a committee, that helps us bugger all when it sits in those offices up there. No. Other people will go except the committee on environment. Thank you very much for sending it there, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That would be nice, Chair, for the members to participate.
But you should be clever with these invites. You do send it in the right channels, but you also send a copy here. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Then this committee at least knows about it. We can push those people. But okay. Once again.
Thank you, sir. We'll channel them directly.
I hope you enjoy going on this trip with other people from Parliament, not your own committee. I hope you enjoy that. And I hope it's a useless trip for you because of that reason. Now he's taking away our trips as well. Yeah.
Okay, Chair, we still encourage that the members attend the sales workshop, especially after this presentation. Chair, the outline, I will talk briefly to the top people.
You said it was in Mongolia, no one was here.
I will talk to the national context, Chair, and then give background and also the status quo of the Nagoya Protocol. And also the intention to ratify, what are the benefits for the country, and also go to conclusions. Next slide. Chair, it's just to provide the portfolio committee with background on the Nagoya Protocol, on access to genetic resources, and also fair and equitable sharing of benefits arising from their utilization. This protocol is designed to achieve one of the objectives of the Convention on Biological Resources. But it has got three legs. One is for conservation, one sustainable use, the third one is for access and benefit sharing. Because of the negotiations, the parties agreed that because an important issue, we need to have a protocol regarding the access and benefit sharing. And also to brief the committee on the status quo, and also our intentions of to propose for Republic of South Africa to ratify, and also to request the portfolio committee to recommend to the National Assembly that the Republic of South Africa ratify the protocol. Next slide. at the national context, whilst negotiations took about 6 years to discuss it, we realized that our resources are leaving our shores without any control. Hence, in Chapter 6 of the Biodiversity Act, we created a provision to deal with issues of access and beneficiary. Therefore, before even the parties agreed on the protocol, we started doing implementation as a country because we saw a risk as far as our resources are concerned. Therefore, we developed that chapter and also accompanied by regulations. Those regulations are called bioprospecting regulations. We define what is bioprospecting because in simple language, we see bioprospecting is like mining a biological resource, where you do extraction and you take those components, you produce something for the benefit of the nation. We also have phases for bioprospecting so that it is a systematic process in terms of applying, accessing the resources, and also coming to a benefit sharing agreement with the stakeholders. Identification of beneficiaries. Thus far, we have signed 8 permits. I must say, the popular species that I used there is the Pelagonia, Aluferox, you have Skeletia, and also there's a recent plant that was used in Northern Cape, Quamachas, Gaibos, that we also issued a permit to the people of Northern Cape. Therefore, those are popular plants that are being used. Even the velvet monkey is used for HIV testing of a drug. Therefore, we also issued a permit for that because it's also part of bioprospecting. The legislation we have is supported by NEMA, Protected Areas Act, other legislation that are governed by other departments, even the use of the indigenous knowledge system. Because in the bioprospecting regime, you have an element of recognizing the indigenous knowledge. Mm-hmm. Next slide. As a background, the Nagoya Protocol is an international agreement adopted in Nagoya, Japan in October 2010. Even in that time, we had a segment for parliamentarians when this was adopted. The objective, of course, as I said earlier, is about fair and equitable sharing of the benefits arising from the utilization, and also to look at issues of appropriate transfer of technologies, taking into account the rights over resources and technology, appropriate funding mechanisms, and also contributing to the conservation of biodiversity.
What's genetic resources?
A genetic resource, Chair, it took a long time to agree for the parties what is genetic resource. Chair is when you are using, not only taking the plant itself and just crush and use it, once you process it through the lab to produce something out of it, that one is defined as a genetic resource because we are using, extracting and using the core of the plant. Even animals, Chair.
Plants and animals, anything you extract from them is a genetic resource.
Yes. Well, it's linked to the genes. And also, Chairperson, as I said, negotiations started in 2005, following a call during WFSD in Johannesburg in 2002, that the parties should start negotiating an international regime that is legally binding to promote and safeguard the fair and equitable sharing of benefits arising out of utilization of genetic resources and associated traditional knowledge. Therefore, you are not only extracting it alone, you must also understand who is the indigenous knowledge holder, who should be part of that beneficiation scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And then the call was later acted upon in COP 7 of the CBD in 2004 to say, let us establish an ad hoc open-ended working group on ABS. That's the group that met for 6 years trying to start a deal.
It was a hell of an open-ended.
It was open-ended, Chair.
It took 6 years and it was so open-ended.
Exactly. And, Chair, you see the next slide. This thing was polarizing. between the developed and the developing countries, because some of these genetic resources were already in the developed world. Therefore, the ease of respective issues was debated at length to say where to start drawing the line. Therefore, those issues made countries take more time in agreeing on an international binding regime. Next slide. As I said, issues of technology transfer, they were on the table. Respect of national laws. For some of the countries were saying, if we come to your country with bioprospect, we don't have to respect your law. We want to come and take, and then we can process in our own countries. Therefore, that issue was a big issue. Issues of capacity building, the controls. How do you make sure that proper checkpoints where you access the resource? Restrictive issues, access, and sharing of benefits. Those were more issues that were highlights of the debate. Next slide. The status, honorable members, signatures for parties to sign were opened February last year until February this year at the UN headquarters in New York. The protocol has to date been signed by 92 countries, which now is not as slow like the previous one we're talking about. South Africa signed the protocol on the 11th of May 2011, and then the protocol has been ratified by only 5 countries so far, and the protocol can only enter into force on the 90th day after the date of deposit of the 50th instrument of ratification, acceptance, approval, and accession. Therefore, there's still a process. What is the speed on this one? It was looking at 2010 up to now. We have so many countries signed, and we have 5 already ratified. It's picking up speed because it's about the web. It's about business. Next slide. The chair, we went into detail here to consult. We consulted Department of Justice with a view to identify possible conflicts with the domestic law. They saw no conflict. The Department
in future, you guys must attach those reports to this stuff, eh? Like water, the Department of Water did it, okay?
Is it attached?
No.
It's not? Okay, so we'll make sure.
You get these for yourself, if you're holding on to them. Like the invites, you keep them.
You must protect me. Therefore, chair was also consulted, and then they said it requires ratification as it is not technical, administrative, or executive. Therefore, it needed this house for ratification. And our own department looked at it, our legal team, and also they saw no conflict with our legislation. We'll supply that evidence, that those opinions. Next slide. Intention to ratify and consultation process. Chair was just articulating here the departments to engage. Relevant national departments like DST, Trade and Industry, DERCO, DAF, and Health were consulted. Our national public entities, the NGO community, business community, because the big issue here, especially in the Western Cape region, we notice around rooibos and honey boosting. I chaired a meeting of the industry and the same council. There were arguments around whose knowledge is it when you drink the rooibos tea? Whose knowledge are you using? But the same people are saying it's their knowledge. Therefore, there are those issues that you must talk to the business people. The rooibos industry and the honey bush industry, the same with wood deer industry. There are many industries that we had to consult to come up with this. Civil society, research and academic institutions, because before you bioprospect, you must go through a research phase to check and tell and disclose what this plant or animal can be used for. And also regional, the region, especially Africa and sub-regional organizations. The issue for us in South Africa, we have the Sven community, the Nama people, who are also people of Namibia and Botswana. Now, when you say this knowledge is with the Sven people, which Sven people? Sven of Africa, of South Africa, or Sven people of Namibia, or Nama people of South Africa and Nama people of Namibia. Therefore, we had to consult as a region on those issues. But we have an understanding that since we have a legislation in South Africa, we are taking the lead in the implementation, since we are able even to sign agreements and also benefit sharing and access with the people who hold the knowledge. Next slide. What are the benefits for ratification? It will, of course, enhance the fair and equitable sharing of benefits arising from the use of these resources and associated traditional knowledge. We've seen this in the agreements that we've signed. It will strengthen compliance and enforcement, particularly once material have left country of origin. For the regime is legally binding even once the resource is exported. If Germany takes the resource as part of the regime, the legally binding regime, they have to make sure that it's not just transferred without going through the process to another holder. Therefore, there are those benefits that you can track and follow up on what you have done as far as enforcement is concerned. It will also strengthen implementation of our own national legislation. It will contribute to research and development in the pharmaceuticals, cosmetics, nutraceuticals, agriculture, and many other sectors who are using genetic resources. Technology and skills transfer, it will also enhance our socio-economic development through job creation, improving health systems, and also development of small, medium enterprises. Next slide. The recommendation to the committee is to take note of the background and status of the protocol under the Convention on Biological Diversity, and also recommend to the National Assembly that the Republic of South Africa ratifies the Nagoya Protocol. Thank you very much, Chair.
Questions or comments? We already have a whole chapter in our law on this, so we've already given effect to it. And we extended their chiefs and traditional leaders, but we didn't consult them, I think.
Sir, they are ongoing. Even last week, they met.
Yeah, they're not on your list of people. You're not on your list of people that consulted, but you give them all these special powers. Hey, this department, you know. I don't know what Mark says about this preferential treatment for chiefs. I don't think you'll be happy. Are there any self-executing clauses in the agreement, in the protocol? Each protocol now and each conference is having its own party of members' party. We won't be going to COPs from the rest of our life. Actually, we won't. It's the top office there that will be going, not us. We create all these COPs, and then everyone else attends them.
Yeah.
Oh, we're with this department. They attend with this department. Okay. It seems it's very technical. No problems. Everyone happy? No questions? Report of the Portfolio Committee on Water Environmental Affairs on the Nagoya Protocol on Access to Genetic Resources and the Fair and Equitable Sharing of Benefits Arising from their Utilization to the Convention on Biological Diversity, dated 5 September. The Portfolio Committee on Water Environmental Affairs having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Access to Genetic Resources and the Fair and Equitable Sharing of Benefits Arising from the Utilization to Convention on Biological Diversity recommends that the House, in terms of Section 232 of the Republic of South Africa Constitution 1996,
approve the said international agreement. Yea, nay, agreed. Alright, we don't need a resolution here. Thank you to the department. So what will happen now is the two resolutions will be corrected by Chileka. I'll sign it, seeing as the committee has passed it. And then two resolutions will be drafted, one general, one applicable to both departments to deal with the processes of international agreements generally. And the whole issue being that the department needs to take the initiative in a way that we don't want to undermine the executive's authority, but take the initiative to engage the committee from the inception of a agreement to the end. Something like that, and we can in practice work out what that means. And then a more specific resolution to be added to the report that's here, which we haven't passed, dealing with those aspects in the other one. That one will need some time just to tighten it up and so on. And then, Mr. Katene, I need you to let us know when those people are available for the briefing in the other two agreements. We probably will be able to fit them in, not next week, but the week after when we deal with the legislation. There'll be space to put those agreements in, okay? So please let me know. We need to do it so we can get all these agreements out there. Anything else from the committee? The members? All right, Mr. Morgan?
Personal information. Are you going to speak to these agreements in the House?
I don't know how they do it.
They probably would request you to.
They do, we can.
I think you're doing it. I suspect that's what will happen. On the British Highlands one, just because I think it's a significant thing for South Africa, it's very important for our Western resources. I mean to ask my party back and do a declaration on that. In support of it, obviously. But I just think it's that big a deal
that we need
to say something a little bit more than just adopting.
If they come and tell me to do it, then I'll say we also want to do declarations. That's fine. I think that one's worth it, the other technical one. We'll on the third one, we'll only decide when we finish the report whether we want declarations as well. Okay, everyone happy? All right, so we'll see each other tomorrow, 9:30, where? S12A, over there, NCOP. And then please look at the program tonight and just see if you're happy. I have a strong feeling, and I say this with a smile on my face, that it's going to change again, but for now, we'll do it like that. Tomorrow, bring those things on memory.
I love it. refer it to each of its member municipalities and request the right processes that must go there, but because we didn't know about